Well, good day. Welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and we have got a good episode for you tonight. I'm looking forward to it. I think you will as well. Before we get to any of that, though, we did our short weather episode earlier this week. So if you were looking for an update on the tropical situation over the last few weeks and all the stuff that's been going on and what to look forward to the rest of the season, make sure you go back and check that one out. Some of us are drying out. Some of us are praying for rain. Some of us are just hanging out. And that's the way it is here on the Disaster Podcast, mainly with Sam Bradley. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Jamie. Well, I'm one of the ones that are hanging out. And our guest tonight's in California, so I'll have to ask her how the fires are going. We got Dr. Joe with us, and both are meteorologists, so we got our whole gang here, which is kind of neat. But I got a question for Kyle. I think I saw a new weather term I'd never seen before. Trash tsunami. Seriously, Kyle.
Well, Sam, that's a new one for me as well. However, that's what they're referring to there, these trash tsunamis, is where I believe it occurred down in Honduras, where a lot of plastic waste that's in the ocean actually gets pushed up onto these pristine and tropical beaches, and it actually starts kind of pushing up on shore and kind of accumulated there and starts working its way inland and up on the beaches there. It's one of those really unfortunate events where, I mean, it's neat to see, but it just kind of highlights some of the damage that we're continuing due to our planet.
Wow. Just one thing after another. Well, Bobby's mentioning that they had a fire-nado here in California. And unfortunately, fire in and of itself is a sad topic for Bobby, and we'll talk about that in a minute. I guess there was a video we'll have to see. So, Becky, is there anything new and unwonderful about the tropics or any storms coming our way?
No, it is still quiet. I feel the need to say knock on wood, but in both the two-day and five-day outlooks, the only thing on the map for the Atlantic is what's left of Beta. It's not quiet. It's actually very loud. Very loud. Misleading. On the Pacific, though, we do have Tropical Storm Lowell, not expected to do much, but sort of meander slowly towards Hawaii, but not really expected to be a threat to land. So, knock on wood, things stay calm. That's a better word. I don't know. I'm probably jinxing all of it.
You said the Q word, you know.
I know.
You did that last week.
I know.
So it's probably.
But I haven't jinxed it yet. Apparently, Joe is getting rain from the remnants of Beta.
So Joe and Jamie are getting rained on, huh? Dr. Joe? Hello?
Yes. Been raining here for 24 hours. All remnants of Hurricane Beta or 412 or whatever it is that we're on now.
No kidding. Well, it's better than Iaisa. I think I said it right this time. But, you know. So, I'm distracted by all of the funny stuff in the sidebar here. Bobby and Becky are going on there. Well, let's just jump in there with Bobby America. Hi, Bobby.
Hi, Sam.
You guys are having too much fun already. We haven't even started.
Well, you know, it's like, I know that maybe you didn't think I was part of your group, but I'm looking at you going, oh, my people. And meanwhile, you're like, oh, guests. I'm like, no, my people.
Well, there you go. You're already part of the family. Well, well, Bobby does a lot of stuff. Basically, why don't you kind of explain what it is you do? You have your moulage business, and how did you get that started, and what's the real intent? And Joe will appreciate this because he does the same thing, focusing on adults, and then we're going to talk a bit about how you do a similar thing with kids, and I think, Joe, you'll find this fascinating. So tell us about your moulage business.
Okay, so my Moolash company is actually for training leaders for preparedness. We are a simulation-based company that does medical trauma modeling for mass casualty, pandemics, police, fire, EMS. So our leaders, we create the storylines based on what is seen, felt, heard, and smelled. So we build it. I started out my career actually in simulation on the clinical side of things. I've been doing this a very, very long time. I was one of the first in simulation and was fortunate enough to be on the board that developed out the job descriptions. That's how long I've actually been in this. And I discovered in the development of these very fascinating but very expensive simulators, most people, we received them, and most people were really too afraid to put anything on them. The technology was overwhelming, and back at that point in time, everyone thought the story had to do with the computer components, the technology piece. And we put people in these rooms, and upon observation, what I really discovered was that they weren't meeting these clinical objectives. And because they couldn't really, I mean, everything that you do, everything that we do as providers, everything that we do as responders, as doctors, as teachers, as nurses, even as parents, is based on how we are perceiving that data, you know, based on what are you seeing and what are you feeling and what are you hearing and what are you smelling, and even taste, you know, that metallic taste when you can taste a chemical that's even in the air. And I realized that what we were really doing was creating stories. Now, I used makeup, if you will, as my model of developing out those stories. And I got a bunch of slack about it. I'm not gonna lie. I had to change thoughts. I had to work hard to fight through biases. You know, for years people would see me coming and they'd call me the makeup girl. And I'm like, that's makeup woman to you. And so but you know, and they wanted to really discount the ability to create authentic stories. And anytime you've ever had a scenario go off the rails, more than not, it's because the moulage didn't really tell a story specific in time. And so I looked at those cognitive decision makers and these ability to build in those rapid recognition responses, and then even how they were built into demographics and how they would look on different skin tones and even age demographics and pediatrics as opposed to elderly, as opposed to African American. And I realized that this sort of language, this five-layer language, if you will, was readable. And if we could read it, then we could train to it. And if we could train to it, then we would have to learn to write it. And we'd have to learn to write it in a way that if you had the skill set, we created opportunities for growth. And if you didn't have the skill set, we would know how to align our future training dollars. And believe it or not, it opened up this door for me, this pathway, and I became impassioned about telling these stories in an accurate way so that we, because how often in training do we have people not meet training outcomes? But the first thing they'll say to you is, yes, but in the real world, I would have done that correctly. And we really couldn't dispute that, right? Because we didn't know, because we also hadn't provided them probably enough skill set, and most of the time they probably could have, but when they couldn't, we had these opportunities for growth. And what was really important about that was that we had this ability to make a difference. And it was all in the story that we were going to tell them. So we could, you know, even something as simple as, say, vomitus. You know, vomitus tells such a story. So when someone vomits, they could vomit for a myriad of reasons. They could be running and they're out of shape and they're running from a mass casualty, so they vomit perhaps. They've had a heart attack or a cardiac incident. They've thrown up from, you know, blunt force trauma. I mean, there's all these different reasons, nausea, flu. There's all these different reasons that people will vomit. And whether it's going to be, you know, regular vomit that maybe just has their morning pill in it, or if it's going to be, say, you know, blood tinged or coffee ground vomitus, you know, the ability to tell stories accurately, I found to be sort of this fascinating vehicle to get out there and actually do my piece that aligned with our leaders. And I just used makeup, and I built off from there, actually, but I used makeup as the vehicle to do so.
I just hope this doesn't become the vomit show.
Well, let me just share with you that, you know, if you've seen my book, it's the only book of its kind actually in the world. It's still the leader in the country, and it's been around a while. And there's a very, very in-depth segment on the on feces. Now, feces tells you all kinds of stories, but that was a particularly dark period of my life during that research.
The poop show. Well, Dr. Joe, not that you can relate to poop so much, maybe you can, but I've told her all about Paragon and the stuff you guys do, and I can see how there's a lot of like thinking here, eh?
Well, no question about it. I think what I heard was how important realism is to really get across the training you're trying to get across and really teach people what it is you want them to learn. And know that they can then take that into a real situation and put it to use. So I absolutely love what I'm hearing. It's awesome.
Yeah, and it's going to get better. Go ahead, Bob.
Correct. Well, you know, and then when you know, you're thinking about that stress inoculation, and so much of what my work has done has been stories that people have told me. They've come to me and they've told me their difficult stories. They've basically told me their own learning gaps, or their learning mistakes, or the learning mistakes of someone else that has affected them profoundly. And I've taken every one of these stories and I built courses around them, because I figured that, you know, I'm not going to get into your arena, but I can support your arena. So I wanted to create these immersive stories, and I get pretty deep into them. So for instance, I've you know, moved into the medical part of it. Then I did all I could do in there. You know, I researched crepitus. I researched, you know, thick odorous drainage, wet gangrene, dry gangrene. And then I decided to move off into the trauma mass casualty component, which opened up multiple doors for that, you know, about telling those variations of stories as well. And when you're looking at those, you know, that muscle memory, that rote learning, that cognitive decision making, the ability to, you know, engage while you're, you know, that sets you along that pathway, and you're constantly, I think it's something like 300,000 points of data, you know, comes at you at once that you're always perceiving on some level. The number's really remarkable. And again, if you have the skill set and you've been trained to it, you'll probably set up on that pathway that's like, okay, I know this is correct because I've gathered the data and that makes sense to me, so I'm going to move forward. Or it's not, you know, it's not even just what should be there, it's also what shouldn't be there. And the ability to create those stories, it's just an amazing thing. It's really just turned into this sort of passion for me.
Yes, we can tell you're passionate, very passionate. That's what I love about you. Well, let's talk about something not quite so cheerful. What happened to you in the campfire?
Well, you know, the campfire came along into our life, and it came along at exactly the moment that I had been working extremely hard for. I was stepping up on a stage to speak to our country's leaders. It was a simulation and modeling-based company that had all the heavies there. You know, Lockheed Martin was there. The military was there. I'd spent a lot of money. I'd paid my dues to get to this platform, if you will, to speak about training realism and the value of it to all of our learners and our police and our fire and our military and how important these pieces were. And as I was about a half hour out, I get a phone call from my husband saying that there was a fire moving our way and that he wanted to know what I wanted him to grab. And I wasn't as therapeutic as I probably could have been. You know, he's Italian, and I'm thinking, okay, maybe you're just overreacting just a little bit, because I needed to concentrate. And so I said, well, you know, you can get this, this, and this. And so then he calls me back about 10 minutes later, and I truly am getting ready to step up on stage. And he's in the truck, and he sounds quite shaken. And he said, I just want to call and let you know that I don't think I'm going to get out of here, and I wanted to tell you goodbye. And I'm like, I want to see pictures. And so he sends me pictures. He's trapped in the truck. And, you know, obviously the flames are 50 feet up in the air. There's, you know, ambulances that have blown up and they're on fire. There are people hitting each other into vehicles. There are literally thousands of people trapped onto the roadway. And he, you know, the scene is dire. And so I'm speaking with them about, okay, and literally all the training I had developed for the fire departments, because I had developed out a training program for UC Davis, their fire crew that had come through there. I did this immersive amount of research in there. So I instantly, you know, I'm saying, well, you know, is there a hard spot? Can you get into a cement building? Can you get into a rock? You know, obviously a fire can't reburn over an acreage that's already been burned. You know, in my mind, I'm calculating, okay, if he goes into the cement building, do poisonous gases build up? So I'm like working through all of these pieces, you know, and he's stuck. He's not getting out of this line. And so about that time, his phone goes dead, and I stepped on stage and I spoke about the value of training realism and how it was imperative for stress inoculation and the ability to work through these pieces and how much we owed our first responders and our police and our military fire to give them this data to prepare them for our own well-being. I heard from him about 8.5 hours later. His story was pretty miraculous. He was one of those groups of people that they had brought into the parking lots and, you know, turned on the fire hoses with the flames just or the water going over them in an attempt to keep, you know, the cars cool. The temperatures inside the cars were reading about 200. But after about 8.5 hours, he did make it out. I did lose my home and my company did burn down as well. But it was the sort of, I was already working on active shooter training for children because I realized that we had this gap between our leaders and how we were going to be providing these training pieces in a way that wasn't going to be as frightening. And then after I rebuilt my company, it took me about, it wasn't at the level it was prior, but, you know, about 6 weeks in, I recreated all my forensic cast that I had built prior. My clients gratefully waited for me. They said, you know, they went ahead and kept ordering in product and they said, we'll wait for you. And I was very grateful for that. And so about 6 weeks in, we opened the door and started limping back towards production and moved forward from there. And after that is when I created EFA, actually, which is a complete resilience and ACEs-based training for children who come through mass casualty. Because I had, you know, you can study this, of course. You think you can understand it. You believe that you have answers and all these different pieces in place. But until you've come through your own mass casualty, you don't quite fully understand the learning, I guess, that's going to come out of it. And so learn I did.
Yeah, wow. Jamie says, wow, in the corner. Yeah. But, you know, there's always that bit of a silver lining we keep talking about, that because of that, she became more in touch with dealing with traumas, especially with kids. We're going to go to Aoife here in just a second, but I want to kind of get some feedback here. Jamie, what did you think so far about what Bobby's story?
Well, I've never been through anything that harrowing with a family member. I mean, the closest I've come is been 20 minutes away at the firehouse when a hurricane was rolling through our area, and you know, having to, you know, talk to my wife with three small kids at home and, you know, dealing with the fact that it felt like the siding was coming off the house and I was at the firehouse and I couldn't get to her and she's trying to tell me just stay where I am. And so I can only imagine what you must have been going through, Bobby. I can't even, you know, I think you're right. You came with a whole new perspective on what people were going through trying to deal with.
I can't imagine a worst case scenario as you're stepping on stage to talk to some high level people. There's nothing worse in the world you could hear. What do you think, Kyle?
I echoed many of Jamie's comments. I can't begin to imagine a situation like that. But to me, you know, hearing your story, Bobby, just goes to show the importance of, you know, it preparing your family members, your spouses, your loved ones, and trusting them to, you know, do as they've been kind of taught and have do the things that have been talked about to keep themselves safe and protect those most valuable items, but also you and the fortitude that you had to still go on that stage and to speak with a renewed sense of purpose truly had to be one of the most, I would imagine, empowering experiences that you may have ever had.
Indeed. Becky, we'll let Bobby answer to all of that. What are your thoughts, Beck?
I mean, I sort of echo Jamie's just wow. it sounds traumatic, I think, for all of you. But the fact that you've really turned it into this, I don't even know how to explain it, but I guess I'm particularly interested in the child aspect of it and how you've taken your own experience with dealing with trauma and turned it into something that can help others. It's so incredibly valuable, and just really speaks volumes as to who you are at the core and what you are truly passionate about. I think that's incredible.
Well, that's where we're going to go next. So, Bobby, maybe you can comment on that and tell us a little bit about how the book got started.
Well, I'll be honest. You know, Aoife, and let me just tell you who Aoife is. Aoife, if you haven't seen the book yet and you haven't gone to the website, it's Aoife.org, www.aoife.org, if you'd like to see her. It's A-O-I-S-A. So it's Adam, Opera, Igloo, Family, Adam.org. And Aoife is a lioness, and Aoife is actually a real Irish warrior. She's the strongest woman warrior in the world. She's a real person based back in the like St. Patrick's Day period. And she started her name started in an Irish bar. I was sitting there with a fire chief and a training chief prior to all this happening, who had come and taken my workshop and over in Indy. And so we were just sitting there talking about all the reasons why we should have this training character. And I did a little research and discovered that out of all of the training characters, you know, there's Eddie the Eagle and there's Smokey the Bear and there's all these different training, almost 2,000 of them. But there wasn't one female-based training character. And I was standing there looking at all these coloring books, and I realized there was no one who was providing this bridge into active shooter. And I was already working with the PECC group when I created the active shooter RTF kit that was immersive and enabled like 5 or 6 different agencies to work together under one kit and actually work through all the different triage components. And so completely immersive exercise. And so he had indicated to me that children were afraid and they were asking these really great questions. They were saying, well, what happens if I'm in the bathroom? I'm like, wow, that's a really good question, because what happens when you're in the bathroom? You know, that's a question I have. So she had already kind of been started from that. She was primarily going to be just an active shooter lioness that was going to bridge that gap between creating this friendly dialogue. Because, of course, children are just perceiving exactly what our adults were perceiving. And our educators and teachers in schools were not quite prepared to have these conversations because they themselves were also afraid. And there was a gap between their own education and the people who were providing that from upper level management to bring in these active shooter trainings. So we had this sort of paralleling response that wasn't cohesive. So she was already in the works by the time the fire came through. After the fire, I realized that what we really had – was this resilience-based issue, that our children and even our young adults weren't being prepared for the ACEs of life. They weren't being prepared for not only just resilience-based training, but they weren't being prepared for pandemics and mass casualty. And there was all this situational awareness and education and training development that was missing in there, the self-care, the buddy care, you know, even like just simple triage components like hypothermia care and that we could provide them. We could help bridge some of those gaps and make them feel more comfortable. And then, of course, children, what do children always want to do? They kind of pass that information up. They go home and they share with mom and dad or aunts and uncles. Well, we learned this in class. And so we can learn how to do some self-care with some breathing exercises and the box breathing, of course, that I believe the SWAT teams uses. So we turned that into the sweet breath in, and we turned it into a rhyme, and how to comfort a friend. And we even created these really dark green blankets so that in the event that somebody did have an active shooter event, the children could, you know, maintain their hypothermia and the dark green would even, I mean, it was the amount of research that went into the specific dark green blanket was to ensure that we could reduce the level of trauma coming off on the children who were there witnessing it, because it was just going to look like a wet blanket instead of a blood-soaked blanket. So there was a great deal of research that went into literally every tiny aspect of it. We built in cursive writing because, of course, a certain, you know, data suggests that a certain amount of difficulty in the training helps permeate those that information in a little bit further. When things are just slightly hard, you know, that creates that remembrance that we're looking for. The cursive writing, of course, it has those meditative properties to it. So when you're writing in cursive, you have to really sort of concentrate what you're doing, and that zones you back down into that sort of quieter space. But then what I really loved about it was the adults didn't know cursive. So now we've got this secret language. And who do they have to go find to read it? They have to reach out to an older adult. So maybe it's a grandparent or maybe it's an aunt. So I saw this as being sort of a step up sort of opportunity that we could spread this education, if you will. And of course, we start with our children because we always remember those pieces and we get to grow them up.
Well, I picked a few things out of the foreword, and of course, Bobby sent me the book. We spent hours talking about some of everything in this book. It would take us 3 or 4 hours to go through, but we can't do that. But uniqueness, kindler, gentler, active shooter, trauma, training, it be appropriate for abuse situations, and the concept to build and strengthen a child's courage to make a difference. Bobby, tell a little bit about the other characters, because I think they're all important.
Okay, so there's Aoife, and I'm happy to send anyone a book if you'd like to take a look at it. So there is Aoife. They're all named after musical notes because I think music, it's a language of the mind or the brain, and so it can piece us together. So there's Ottava, who is our octopus, who is this multitasking octopus, and they're going to learn that she has 8 brains and she has 3 hearts. And she, of course, is our crusader that works under the ocean. So you see her, you know, she's the octopus that's calling in our police and our fire, and you see all of her tentacles moving at once to create these this multi-level response. There's Major, who is our falcon savior. There is Aria, who is a little fox who's always got her nose shoved into books, and you see her reading books. There's Dakota. And Dakota is a puppy wolf. And so it's this tribe of family that doesn't quite fit, but they all fit together to create their own unified family. And they go on these adventures together, and they go back through the jungle and the water. And then, of course, there's a child. And the child escapes from his playground, and he's like, he's on the jungle gym, and he grabs onto a banner that's being flown over by our Major, who's our falcon. And that's how he ends up in this story. And because my personality is kind of weird this way, I actually thought it was super funny to be able to write a song where you could go octopus, octopus, fox, fox, and you actually could do it that way.
Well, I'm going to flip through some of the pages. Bobby, I actually did some screenshots and sent them off to these guys, but they probably have no clue, you know, about some of them. But I like this little ditty on one of the first pages. Sometimes life takes you on your planned journey, filled with fun and great adventure. Other times you find yourself far off the path and placed somewhere else. Always remember, when things become rocky, you are never alone. Just keep stepping forward and looking for the stars. That's where something wild calls you home. I get chills even reading that. But, you know, each page in this book, like I said, Bobby and I went through these quite thoroughly. There's on page 9, there's a thing called Ripples of Resilience. Resilience, life is a path of curved swirls and deep turns. With genuine work and dreams big, our strengths we will earn. You want to talk a little about that concept, Bobby?
Okay, so you grouped together two pages. So life is a cursive adventure, curious nose, ears, and eyes seeking more. So take a deep breath and try some new doors. Life's worth everything we've got. Let's explore. And then you actually see a quote there from Einstein, which says, play is the highest form of research. And there's a huge key that goes along with it. And then you see our characters looking through there. And then on the next page, you see resilience. Oh, I see, which I'm sorry. So resilience, life is a path of curls, swirls, and deep turns. With genuine work and dreams big, our strengths we will earn. How many things have we done that were so hard? And, I mean, we're going through hard things right now with our work and our careers and with fires, with the pandemic. And yet, much like, you know, you had indicated before, when you make it through those things, and you come up on the other side of it, you know who you are a little bit more. You are one step closer to defining, oh, I grew right here. This is where I could do better. This is where I can grow more. This is where I can be more. And then this is, I earned that. That's mine if I'm willing to recognize it. So I love that. I love. You know, people say, oh, this is so hard. I'm like, I know, aren't we learning so much? I get uninvited to a lot of parties.
Oh, that's not that. But, you know, we talked about how an adult or someone who knows what this is about can kind of interpret some things that the child is putting in here. Like there's a page for writing down your worries, writing down your hope. And you had mentioned to me, Bobby, that even the colors that a child should use in the book tells you something. Talk about purr. And these mnemonics are great because kids can remember them.
Oh, yes. Well, so purr. So what pages? Did you see the purr page? Let me go right there. Okay, so purr. Purr is practice using reframing and resilience. And so that's just a real easy thing for kids to remember. You know, yes, we had to go through this really hard thing, but what did we learn? Yes, you know, so we're not attempting to put rose-colored glasses on things. We look really squarely in the face. I do a lot of studying of Stoicism. It's been a very inspirational thing for me, and not everyone's into Stoicism, but the ability to say that was really hard, and much like lifting weights. But look now what I have to show for it. You know, anything that we've done that was really hard, that we've questioned, that we probably shed tears over, that we struggled on, anything we made it through, you know, when we did our 10 push-ups, when we said we were going to, you know, only had to do 5, we're stronger for it. We know what it's like to walk in there. And if you even look, there's a part in there, it speaks of cadence. And, of course, cadence has to do with the military, right, because they're actually walking in those cadences. But it's also a dance. So we don't define what that hard looks like for people. The story is a framework. So for some people, yes, this is, you know, mental health, exactly. For some people, the biggest, hardest thing they can go through is just not letting the mashed potatoes touch the peas. And that's still their success. Some people, they're harder based on, the unfortunate reality is it is that the more hard things you go through, the better you become at going through them, and the stronger you do become. It's a journey most of us don't want to be on. However, we can't get there any other way. There are no shortcuts to it. And so purr, much like roar, gives them these, you know, they can a purr is just, I always think in terms of my cat, you know, what does she do when she's happy? She's purring. So she's going to practice using reframing and resilience. When she's roaring, of course, that gives her the ability to react accordingly, outreach and notify others, activate emergency notification systems, and reevaluate and respond. Now, again, that's just a framework, and it would be different whether or not it was stranger danger as opposed to an active shooter, as opposed to a pandemic, as opposed to just mental health issues. So, and there are always these training pages that go behind them that allows them to do the exercise on two different levels. You know, first they print it out, then they're going to use it to do the cursive if they'd like. And then they have a full whole page that enables them to work with a provider. This the coloring book is meant to go in, I hope it goes into every police, you know, car and ambulance car and even our military's deployment and our schools and stuff, so that anyone can pick up this book at any point in time and say, so tell me what your worries are. So we often want to tell people what their worries are, especially children. We assume we know what they are. But if you allowed a child to even express what their worries are, you would have such a clear view of your classroom every morning. You would see like, oh, okay, you know, maybe Johnny hasn't had breakfast in 2 days or anything to eat at all. Maybe Sally's parents got in a physical altercation. Maybe somebody hurt the dog. Maybe we're homeless. But if we allowed them to tell us what their worries were and scale it themselves, and this child went from being, say, a primary yellow and orange color who's now really scribbling hard in black and gray, we have this dialogue that we can see these variations of changes. And you get the screen print, if you will, that, you know, especially now in this virtual world, we could actually literally have our children hold these pages up at any point in time, and we could have a snapshot of what's going on in our classroom when what we think is we're having these behavioral problems or we're having this issue between virtual learning, when we really don't even have a grasp of what's going on in those homes.
Well, Becky's drawing the parallel just to mental health therapy in general, because it is hard work and it can be difficult. And you're trying to infuse that concept in here, but in a very gentle kind of way. I mean, you even talk about breathing exercises in a way that's, you know, that blowing the dandelion. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Well, I was told right up front, nobody wants a children's book on active shooters. I was told that right up front.
Not overtly. Well, Jamie and Becky both have questions, so I'm going to divert here, and then I'm going to go to one of my favorite pages. Jamie.
Well, I just, for me, it one of the hardest lessons that I had to learn, and I think as an educator, pass along to new providers, new nurses that I've educated at different times, is to be an active listener and the value of silence and waiting for the answer, rather than filling in your supposed answer that you think is there. And I think this is so valuable, what Bobby was just saying about, you know, this resource giving a way for you to facilitate getting that answer by using the book and the pages to say what are you feeling, what is going on in your mind right now. So I just wanted to just bring that up there, that this is something that as an educator is something I know I struggled with in the beginning, and learning to work with patients and get histories and find out what was going on under the hood, I think is very similar. And this is a great resource to help facilitate that. Becky?
That just sort of, it reminds me a lot of after severe weather events, and kids have been pretty traumatized, you know, either they, you know, took shelter and, you know, they came out and they've seen the destruction all around them, or they actually were in a building that a tornado has hit, thinking specifically of tornadoes here. This could apply to any type of severe weather. When I was in college, we worked with a group of psychologists to give talks to schools in the area that a tornado had gone through. And it's very similar, I think, to what you're describing, and that, you know, we explained the science behind weather, why the tornado occurred, why it was a very rare event, but here's what to look for in the clouds, and here's all the things you do. You know, you talk about your severe weather safety plan. This is your safe place. You know, bring this back to your parents. Have these conversations. And I think for kids, at least what we saw, it was all about kind of taking back some form of control that the severe weather event had taken away from them. And I think the book is fairly, I would think, pretty similar. I would love to see it as a whole and look through it. But it gives kids a way to kind of vocalize what they're feeling, basically what Jamie just said. I think that's so valuable when they're recovering from a trauma.
Well, and to that, both I know, Sam, you have more questions, but what we're talking really about is that habituation to stress through positive repetition. And we have to prepare them, and a lot of times, whether it's a mass casualty or it's applicable to so many things. One of our surprises was how many of the young adults resonated with the book, and because I kept hearing, they were my surprise client, if you will, because I kept hearing over and over, I wish somebody had given me a book like this when I was growing up. But it didn't just even define who those safety nets were. We always assume, well, it's the parent, or it's a clergyman, or it's a doctor. It gives them other options, because the unfortunate truth is not all of those people in everyone's life is a real answer to those problems. Some of those people are creating those problems in their life. So it helps them then redefine other options to them. And not everyone wants children empowered. And I'm not saying we should empower them, but we need to open up that framework that says, if this feels wrong to you, it might be wrong. And who could you share that with? So if it's an uncle, you know, most people will say, well, it's a family member, you know, so they give them just one answer. So, you know, we open up those doors depending on what the situation is and provide them. If this person isn't an answer, then a police officer might be an answer. If a police officer isn't an answer, then your clergy might be an answer, or a doctor might be an answer. But it helps them, again, under crisis, because when do we forget things? It's under crisis. They could actually go back to this book, because there's an entire section based on what I see, feel, hear, and smell. And the title of the book is called If I Have to Grow, It's Good to Know, because every story matters. So it helps them define who they are, at least in that little moment. You know, I love macaroni and cheese, and I know that I love my cat, and I know that, you know, I feel safe and warm here, here, and here, so that after that crisis, you have this guideline, if you will, to help bring them back to those points of normality.
Oh, yeah, indeed. Kyle, thoughts from you?
Well, I think it can also be a great conversation starter, perhaps thinking about it the other way, where a lot of parents may not know how to begin that conversation with their children or those that are in their care about disasters, about stressors in their lives, either perhaps because they may not understand it, perhaps they just don't know where to begin. And to have a tool, to have a resource like this book to have that conversation, I definitely think it can definitely go both ways, giving, you know, knowledge and, you know, again, we use that word empowering, but think of imparting and transferring some of that responsibility from, oh, just the adult, but to the child as well. And so that as that child then grows and interacts with their peers and so on and so forth, that knowledge can then begin to transcend both horizontally within their peer groups and then vertically among those that they also interact with, because children are incredible positive influencers. And I think this can be a great way to really carry that forward.
Well said, Kyle. Dr. Joe, thoughts from you?
Yeah, I'm thinking of it sort of similar to how Kyle is as well, and that is, you know, in situations, dangerous situations, many of which we've been discussing, you know, the ability to have kids particularly, but anybody, be able to approach those in a calm manner, not to panic, to think their way through those things and out of those things, is incredibly important. And I think that ability spreads to others very quickly. People look for someone that has that ability to do that, and that those people have, as Kyle said, tremendous influence over those around them to hopefully lessen the impact of whatever the traumatic event is.
Well, Bobby, my favorite pages, I think, and I think you know this, are 25 and 26, where the boy and the pup are in a hot air balloon, and Aoife's got a hold of the tether, but she's faced with a break in the road that she can't get through. So the octopus is trying to put a very ornate gate in there so she can get to the other side. There's a story behind that gate. Would you like to tell us about that?
Sure. So the banner flying over is Major, and what the banner says is sometimes in life our plans go askew. We pause and we fret, unsure what to do. You have to keep going, reviewing your goals. Onward in motion, reframing the holes. And when the path becomes rocky in this story, what you see the prominent piece is this pathway that starts out kind of as cobblestones, and then it almost turns into these boulders that they're trying to get over. You know, so that's the continuing shape of this. So in this particular page, it's a dual page. The path is actually broken. So Aoife's she's going to jump across this gap in the path where it's fallen away in the middle, and our octopus is underneath, and she has this very ornate gate that she's going to be attempting to slip in underneath that, you know, kind of like we do, like, okay, you're going to jump. I think I'm going to catch you, maybe. And so this particular story, like most of the different pages in the book, is actually the story of paradise burning down. So in the hot air balloon is Dakota and is our boy. And all that was left of paradise along the canyon, we had these very affluent neighborhoods, and all that was left that rimmed all of these canyons were these very ornate gates. And I went up there, these double wide gates, and they were beautiful. And I went up there and I took pictures of several of them. And so one of those gates ended up back into the story that Ottava, you know, our multitasker, is attempting to bridge this gap with underneath it. And of course, you know, Aoife's a lioness, so she's got a pretty good pounce on her. But that's what the story comes through. You know, there's actually even a suicide piece in there as well. And again, it was the ability to create these stories. But what I really have found about the book is that almost everybody can find who they are in these pages at some point in time. You know, sometimes you resonate with Dakota, sometimes you're resonating with, you know, the octopus or Major, but we've all been in through those pieces at different times. And so the book sort of grows with you the whole way through. And, you know, it builds into schemas. And of course, that instructional psychology piece of it, and those different adapters. But some people will just color the pages, but some people will look further into the story and realize, wow, there are so many things here. And we have a lot of parents who are actually coloring the books with their children directly to open up those conversations.
And we have more on that thought in a bit, but Kyle's going crazy in the sidebar here. You want to tell us what you're writing down, Kyle?
Absolutely. So just as we were kind of carrying on here, I really thought that it was kind of a, through, like, me personally, my experiences through the scouting, the Boy Scouts and the Venturing program, through the emergency preparedness conversations I had, actually steered my career in a very unique direction. And so it really gave me pause to think about this and say, having these conversations with children that are so impressionable, who knows where that might guide them and direct their wonder, which ultimately may help guide their thinking towards perhaps a future career idea, remembering back on a conversation here, or even to promote a one get involved in their community through any number of voluntary organizations, either locally or that are active in disasters nationally.
Yes, very good. Go ahead, Bobby.
Right. You know, when I was writing this book, the book was really meant to empower our young females as well as our young males. And so there's even androgynous characters or gender neutral characters in there. It does embrace the arts as well. I think the arts are an important piece in trauma. I think you see a lot of grief and healing come through those different things, whether it's through dance or music or play. And of course, laughter is so tremendously important into that healing piece of it. So we want to, you know, you see a lot of those pieces come through, but then you also, you know, it gives a chance to, you know, sort of redefine what makes a family. How often do we see children who are adopted from out of the country, whose parents maybe don't look like them, or they have a same-sex parent? And so it kind of creates all these different avenues. I've had a few pediatrics look through the book, pediatricians look through the book, you know, and everyone sees something different. It's very unique. Whoever's holding the book, you know, because the framework is completely structured, but it's so openly structured that it creates this dialogue for so many different things. And so that's been the exciting journey for that.
Oh, and as you go along, you're going to find more and more of that. So Roar actually gets into what do you do in an emergency? You want to talk about that part?
Yes. So the emergency part of it for Roar, it enables you, depending on what the emergency is, to react accordingly. I mean, we always think, well, react accordingly. Well, what does that actually mean for this situation? And so once you've done that assessment, you've looked around and you've gotten your clues, and you know, we have a rhyme that goes with it, and right after that it says, something's not right, I can tell, that's a fact. It's time to find answers, look for clues, and react. And that's all it's actually saying, is react accordingly. You know, is this where you just need some comfort, or is this where you need intervention, or is this where I should let somebody else know? And so, and then again, it just opens up that dialogue, is what is accordingly for this situation? And then notify others based on what your situation is. What would be an appropriate answer for notifying others? Is this something I share with my mom? Is this something I share with the teacher? Should I call the police? Who should be involved in this? And if my first line of interaction isn't somebody who I necessarily trust, who would be three or four more options who could be that person? And it creates, again, this sort of legend for them. In the very front of the book, there's a legend that takes them through this walking path of life as this adventure. And it's under duress, again. We never know what to do under duress, so we fall back to those things we do know, right? How often do we see us doing, you know, you'll see somebody taking vitals over and over and over again, because that's all they know how to do, right? But if you have this sort of playbook next to you that says, oh, I could call this person and this person, this person, I've already identified. If my first person isn't ready, then maybe my second person could be. So it allows sort of this chain of assistance, if you will. And I keep going up until somebody gives me that answer that feels right in the situation. And then, of course, activate my emergency notification system. Yeah, if I need it. Who would those people be should this scale? And then let's reevaluate and respond accordingly. I mean, we always forget that last little piece that we need to then reevaluate. How often do we say, well, I did that? Well, have we recircled back around? Are our doors all still locked? Do we still have the calls into the appropriate people? Do we need more blankets here? Let's reevaluate and then respond accordingly if that's what it calls for. Sometimes everybody just needs an extra cookie. Maybe that's our response, and that's an appropriate response.
That'll make Joe happy. Huh? Under React, you have, I am brave, I will confide, but even I may run and hide. So it's telling kids that there will be situations where it's okay for the moment to run away, as well as, you know, then it gets a little bit more into, you see all these creatures on their devices, a ping, a call, a text, a shout, notify others, and get the word out. You want to comment on that, Bobby?
Yes, the first part of the book is based on resilience-based learning. That's self, you know, my own self-care, my buddy care. The second half of the book is based on if we have to bring in our resources, our activation systems. And so, you know, if it moves on to those other pieces, then we have that ability to, who should we call under this? How do we notify parents? How do we notify our, you know, our police and our fire and our responders and get them here? Just those basic skills. And are they put under our, do we have an ICE number in there? And it just, again, it's a resource.
Well, we don't have too much time, but I definitely want to touch on the adult aspect of this book. You and I talked about, you know, when I was working with my firefighters in Northern California, if I set this book on a table with a box of crayons and walked away, would I come back later to find out it had been colored in? You know, I want to talk about that because now we're kind of moving into what can we do with this concept for EMS and fire and hospital and maybe even meteorologists, who knows, and dispatch. Yes, Kyle, I wouldn't forget about you. There's so many other people, I think, that could benefit by a version of this book.
That's true. And adults like to color for all the same reason children do. It helps calm our breath. It helps focus us on something that's there in front of us. We don't have enough creative outlets. It gives us something to do. There's a whole other series that are coming in, and it's called Shut Up, I'm Trying to Heal. And it's, you know, which probably is a terrible title, but I find it funny, and I actually think. And so again, it's going to be stories of what do we want our police and fire, first responders, military to know from a children's perspective, because children just give it to you straight, right? All right, have you had a nap? You know, let's go, you know, sometimes we just need to go back to a little less adulting, because some of us are behaving badly. We could use a timeout and a cookie, you know? And so I think just the reminder of that is, you know, we forget that we're all still trying to meet some of those needs. And, of course, the more we don't meet our own needs, the more reactive some of these people do become, right? Cookies, exactly. So I think if we could get this, you know, this response from kids, you know, shut up, I'm trying to heal. And I think then these people might color in these coloring books, because it creates that. That's right. You know, leave me. I'm trying to heal right here. I've got my 15 minutes break. I'm coloring. And then it sort of engages them at their levels, what my hope is.
Indeed. Joe, I want to do one for disaster responders. I think that, you know, when you think of all the people that can benefit by this, it's just mind-boggling and in ways we never thought of before. So let's do a quick final words. Kyle, what are your final thoughts for Bobby?
Well, Bobby, I just want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us your passion here with this book. And I am very excited to see how this continues to evolve and where it kind of takes you on things. And keep up the great work. And I'm super stoked about this. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, I think this book should be in every National Weather Service office, in every private sector meteorologist office. I think this would be such a hit with, I mean, everybody I can think of, and by mainly no meteorologists and emergency managers, but it's really phenomenal work. And I looked at your website as we were talking, and so I just got a really visual sense for the work you do in the medical community, and that really blew me away. Thank you for telling us about this. I feel like I've just learned an immense amount tonight. And thank you for sharing your personal story, too. I can't imagine that was, you know, as easy to talk about, but it's clear that's made such an impact on your life. And I appreciated hearing that.
Now you know why I was so excited about this episode. I was trying to keep it veiled a little bit because I wanted it to be a surprise. So, Dr. Joe, are you surprised?
As I have been listening tonight, I'm thinking about how valuable it would be to have this book out in the field when we are interacting with families that are in the immediate aftermath of a disaster event, and to be able to give them a resource like this to, one, get the kids occupied, but to teach them some really valuable lessons at the same time. I think this should be a really important addition to our toolbox.
Absolutely. And in shelters and things like that, where I've had experiences with kids not having anything to do, I can think of a thousand places for this. You may be selling a lot of books, Bobby. So, Jamie.
Yeah, I concur with Joe. You know, there's so many places that this book fits, and I'm excited to see that you're continuing to look at this as expanding it for adults as well, because I think you're right. You leave this sitting around somewhere, it'll get colored in, because I think there's just a lot of us could, you know, a lot of us need to shut up and let ourselves heal. So I think that this is a great topic. Sam, thanks for kind of hiding it from us a little bit. I think you had the right idea there. Let it kind of float into our psyche as well as we were listening to everything. So just great. You know, Joe, I was thinking about as well earlier when Bobby was talking about the importance in training and education and telling the story. And I think that's something that you guys at Paragon Medical Education Group do such a good job of as well, is when you bring responders in and start the training evolutions that you put together, that story is so important to getting across what you're trying to teach people.
Well, I think you're exactly right, Jamie. Not only is the story important, but the story provides the structure by which you hang the lessons on. And so we try to incorporate a powerful story into all of our customized training programs for all levels of first responders.
Joe, where can folks find you and find Paragon Medical Education Group so that you can talk about how to bring in some sort of customized training for them that will meet the stories they need to hear about?
We're always happy to talk to folks so that we can customize that event for them. They can reach us at paragonmedicalgroup.com or on Facebook at Paragon Medical Group, and always through the Disaster Podcast or the Disaster Podcast Facebook page.
Excellent. And Bobby, give us the website once again so we can have folks find it for you and follow up on that.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and I'll type it up and put it out there. And let me just say, first off, thank you, all of you, for the very, very important work that you're doing. I strongly believe we are part of the team that is making a difference. And I think that we have an obligation to do so for our first responders and our military and those who serve and our police officers and our trainers, our doctors. And I feel so honored that you've brought me on board. So thank you to begin with on that. And I just always want to, going back to that story, just remind you as well that we're creating our children's stories right now. And these children are going to grow up and become our future police officers and firemen and military and our doctors. And if we don't have the ability to reach them during these crises, they're going to play out in their later years once they're in these careers. And so I think the interception of some of these things is going to be valuable in that healing later on. Because as we know, whatever we don't address when we're much younger, it rears their heads again under these stressful situations. So I think those are important things. But my hats are off to all of you. Thank you for the work you're doing.
And we're glad to be part of your team.
And we'll definitely have the resources and links and everything definitely shared both in our Facebook group and also on the disasterpodcast.com site for this episode so that folks can go in there and follow up on that directly. Becky, where can folks find you?
I am on Twitter most frequently at WX_Bex. Also on LinkedIn, Becky DePodwin, and as always on the Disaster Podcast Facebook group.
And Sam, last but not least.
Well, you can find me with my nose in this book. I can't take it out of there. But otherwise, you'll find me on all of the above mentioned places under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11, certainly on disasterpodcast.com and in our Facebook group. I think everybody in this group is going to want one of these books. See, Jamie, if I had told you earlier, yeah, we're going to talk about a coloring book tonight, you would have said, are we really out running out of material? So it kind of had to There you go.
I would have trusted you, Sam. I would have trusted you. Anyway, folks, you can find me under the handle PodMedic in most social media locations. So please friend, follow, or otherwise catch up with me there. And, of course, at thedisasterpodcast.com, where the podcast episodes live and where you can find the links to subscribe to the episodes and catch every new one as they come out. And, of course, I urge everybody to go over and join the Disaster Podcast Facebook group, where we try to answer any questions you might have on any episodes, connect with our special guests, and of course, we always put links to things that we talk about in the episodes as well. So please join us over there. Sam, great episode. Thanks for bringing Bobby into the show and discussing everything we talked about.
And I'm sure we'll have her back again, because this story is only just beginning. So to wrap this, I'd have to say, if I have to grow, it's good to know, because Every Story Matters by Bobby Marica is not our everyday coloring book.